Hi, this is Millie Long. I'm co-editor-in-chief of the American Journal of Gastroenterology, and I'm thrilled to introduce my guest for this podcast, who is Dr. Frank Foray, professor of medicine and director of the IBD Center at Mayo Clinic in Jacksonville, Florida. Frank, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Millie, for having me.
Well, I'm thrilled about the topic of this podcast, which is really emphasizing prevention and things we can do to help to prevent complications in our patients with inflammatory bowel disease. And a lot of these things we can really empower our patients to advocate for themselves with their gastroenterologist, with their primary care doctor. So I want to jump into some of the important recommendations from your recent guideline that was published in the American Journal, really focusing on this topic. So one of the first things I wanted to discuss is vaccines, because there are some vaccines that are recommended for everyone who may be older in the general population, but our patients with inflammatory bowel disease meet criteria to have them at younger ages. So will you talk us through those recommendations?
Happy to do so, Millie. So if you were born before 1995, there's probably a 99% chance you've been exposed to chickenpox. So you may or may not know you were exposed to chickenpox, but you are likely exposed to chickenpox. And for those people that don't know, chickenpox infection actually remains in your body for as long as you live. And then as you get older, typically in your 40s, 50s, and 60s, it can reactivate as a condition called shingles, which is a painful rash that you can get. And a certain percentage of those people develop post-herpetic or post-shingles nerve pain, which can be quite disabling. So it is important that we vaccinate individuals against shingles. It is a dead vaccine, so there's no problem giving it to all patients. And everyone 50 and older should get it. But our patients with inflammatory bowel disease, anyone 19 to 49 should receive the vaccine, either because they have IBD alone or they're on medicines that affect their immune system. Now, if you've had shingles once, you should still receive the two-dose vaccine because it protects you from developing other cases or subsequent cases of shingles. And if you did receive the chickenpox vaccine, so let's say you're 25 years old and did receive the chickenpox vaccine, there's still a risk of developing shingles if you go on medicines that suppress the immune system. So regardless of whether you had chickenpox or received the varicella or chickenpox vaccine, we would recommend anyone 19 and older to receive the vaccine. Now, the other vaccine I want to mention is the pneumonia vaccine. So pneumonia is another common cause for being admitted to the hospital if you have inflammatory bowel disease. And we have two newer vaccines. And when I say new, they've still been in studies for many, many years. It's not like they were studied 2 years ago and now are available. Many, many years are needed to confirm the safety and efficacy of these vaccines. One is called PCV20. The other is called PCV21. It's recommended just like the shingles vaccine for everyone over the age of 50, but our patients with inflammatory bowel disease, 19 to 49, would be eligible, especially if you're on a drug that affects your immune system.
That's great. And Frank, in my practice, I do recommend those vaccines as well, and even offer them in my clinic. I will say that many gastroenterologists may not be able to do that. And so they may partner with your primary care physician or even a pharmacy like a CVS or Walgreens where these vaccines can be given. But it's important to recognize that IBD patients really need them at younger ages than the general population. Now, when is the best time for a patient to receive a vaccine? Is it before, during, after they start a therapy? What are your thoughts on that?
The ideal time to receive a vaccine is soon after their diagnosis, if they're 19 and older, to kind of do catch up. Check their hepatitis A and B testing. If they're not immune to hepatitis A or B, you can give them the vaccine. And the vaccines we're all talking about are inactive. They're not live. So the best time would be early on as you establish your relationship with your GI team. They should be asking you about vaccination, checking you for hepatitis A and B, and bringing you up to date. Now, you may not be able to do all these after the first few visits. So those annual visits are also a good time to make sure that you're up to date. Even if you're on immunosuppressive therapy, the vaccine may not be as effective if you're on immunosuppressive therapy, but nonetheless, you're getting some protection. And as long as we're talking about inactive vaccines, you can receive them.
No, that's great. So the best time is early, but the second best time is now, just making sure that you get the vaccine.
Anytime.
So, you know, some of my patients in regards to flu vaccine have felt, you know, I've gotten the flu vaccine, but I've still gotten the flu. You know, is it worth still getting the flu vaccine? What are your thoughts on that? And do you recommend the flu vaccine to all your patients?
We recommend the flu vaccine to everyone annually. The flu vaccine some years is 40% effective in preventing influenza. Sometimes it's 60% effective. Now, these vaccines are not developed to prevent you from developing influenza or prevent you from developing COVID. Rather, they're there to prevent you from being in the hospital or, God forbid, in the ICU with a bad infection. So the bottom line is they're safe, they're effective, and because the strains change every year, we do recommend doing the flu shot. The flu vaccines are typically available in August, but I typically like to give the vaccine closer to late September, October, because that's when we start seeing an increase in the number of flu cases, mostly throughout the United States.
One other vaccine that you addressed in this guideline recently that really wasn't available in the previous version is the RSV vaccine. Could you explain to our listeners what age groups should be vaccinated with this vaccine and why is it important specifically in IBD?
So RSV is another cause of upper respiratory tract infection. That infection is more common in patients with ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease, especially if they're on immunomodulating therapies. We now have three approved vaccines against RSV. It's a single dose. As of now, there are no recommendations to repeat it. And everyone above the age of 75 should receive this vaccine. You could actually get it at the same time as your flu shot. You can get it the same time as your pneumonia shot. Again, typically like to give it, if you've never had it, in August or September before RSV season. The newest recommendations are that our patients with IBD or anyone, rheumatoid arthritis, any kind of disease that's immunocompromising, or if you're on one of the immunocompromising medications, anyone 50 to 74 are now eligible. So we have been recommending this to patients 50 to 74 if they're on steroids or if they're on any of the advanced therapies, infliximab or any of these other agents that many of our patients are taking.
Frank, there was a nice paper that you did that looked at complications of RSV in patients with inflammatory bowel disease. And that showed that patients with inflammatory bowel disease may be at more risk for hospitalization. Is that right?
That's absolutely correct. That was published in the Red Journal as well. And what we looked at was a large database of patients, and we compared individuals with inflammatory bowel disease to those individuals that were quite matched equally, and showed that patients with inflammatory bowel disease are more likely to be hospitalized. Again, we see the same thing with influenza and pneumococcal infections. So it really is important to kind of lower your risk. If the medicines are helping you, if they're keeping your colitis, your Crohn's disease in remission, let's not end up with a complication that potentially is preventable by vaccination.
Well, one final question, which I get sometimes from my patients as well, and I wanted to make sure we clarify, is that many understand if you're on a biologic therapy, an advanced therapy, that you need to really be conscious of these vaccines and prevention. But what about steroids? What about the patient that needs an intermittent course of steroids? Is that considered a medication such that we would need to think about some of these preventive factors?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, as you know, and I want to make sure our patients understand, is that we talk about lots of different therapies, but the drug that is most likely to be associated with getting you in the hospital is being on prednisone 10 to 20 milligrams more than 2 or 3 weeks. So if someone has been on a steroid course over, let's say, 6 to 8 weeks, beginning with 40 milligrams of prednisone, that is going to affect their immune status, and that puts them at risk. So my patients who are 30 years old, who are now doing well on mesalamine, let's say for ulcerative colitis, but needed a course of steroids, I'm going to follow all these recommendations to bring them up to date because A, they may need another course of steroids in the future or B, escalated to an advanced therapy. So yes, I do consider those patients immunocompromised, not for someone who gets a few days for poison ivy, let's say, but if they're being treated for their underlying inflammatory bowel disease for several weeks, that does put them at risk.
Thank you. And obviously, I think for many of us in GI, we recognize that sometimes we need those courses of steroids, that we try to minimize it because of that, those very factors that really steroids seem to drive a lot of these infectious risks, even to a greater extent than our other medications. Well, Frank, thank you so much. We've really been through the gamut of prevention in vaccinations from your guideline. But I certainly wanted to allow you to provide some summary for some of the other areas that your guideline covered that our patients may be interested in learning about prevention in.
I'd like to go over with your audience the importance of skin cancer screening. So we know that patients with inflammatory bowel disease, especially Crohn's disease, are at increased risk of melanoma, which is a serious form of skin cancer. In addition, some of the medications that we use increase the risk of a non-melanoma type skin cancer. So I send all my patients, regardless of their age, I see 16 and older in my practice, to see the dermatologist. The dermatologist can then decide what their risk factors are and determine when to come back. Another concern we have is the importance of screening for cervical cancer. In women that are infected with the HPV virus, there's an increased risk of cervical cancer, and we have concerns that some of the medications we're prescribing may accelerate the risk of that HPV infection going into cervical cancer. So we do recommend that women see their primary care doctor, their gynecologist, let them know what disease they have and what medications they're on so that they can be appropriately screened, and they can be stratified into low risk or high risk based on their HPV status. Now, we just mentioned steroids, and steroids are necessarily needed to treat patients that are having flares of their colitis. And we know that if you've been on prednisone for more than 3 months, that can take calcium out of your bones and cause a condition called osteopenia or osteoporosis. And so in individuals who have been on steroids, in postmenopausal women, in individuals who are underweight, we do recommend they go for bone density scans that will determine the strength of their bones. And then based on the strength of their bones, they could be referred to see a specialist for treatment of osteoporosis or osteopenia. Smoking is bad, so we certainly want to recommend that everyone stop smoking. And one last thing I don't want to avoid discussing, living with ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease can be very challenging. And there's a much higher rate of depression and anxiety in our patients with ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease. It's very important that we as physicians screen for that, and for you as a patient to let your doctor, let your nurse practitioner, your physician assistant know that you're struggling, because we want to be able to send you back to the primary care doctor to get appropriate therapy. It could be medical therapy, it could be behavioral therapy, but not addressing depression and anxiety is a big problem, one that we can really help you with.
No, I think that's a great summary, Frank, and can't agree more about the depression and anxiety playing a role in this disease process, and that we really need to address all of it to help to get our patients better. So please reach out to your gastroenterologist, your primary care doctor, and let us help from those scenarios as well. So we've done a whirlwind tour through the July guideline that you published on preventive health and inflammatory bowel disease. I'd like to direct our listeners to the GI.org website, where we have resources for patients, including highlights of our other IBD guidelines that were recently published with summaries of important information for patients. So Dr. Frey, thank you so much for joining me on this important topic.
Thank you for having me, Millie. Have a great evening.